I'm going to read the medical definition of dyslexia. According to the Mayo Clinic, it's classified as a learning disorder that causes difficulty in reading and processing language. Help me see what you see to describe dyslexia.
Dyslexia is just basically a way of thinking differently. You get to the same destination just by a different route. And, you know, I don't think of it as a disability. In many ways, I think of it as an asset because it's good to look at something from a different perspective. So, you know, I very much champion the fact that, yes, your brain sometimes finds things difficult to decode. It's like a puzzle. In many ways, language is a puzzle. And sometimes dyslexics maybe don't have the right puzzle pieces and put them in the right places. You can be taught how to do it, but just doing our puzzle is a little bit differently to the way you guys would do your puzzle.
The way I was taught coming up was that dyslexics see letters backwards. Is it that simple?
It's not that simple, though that is a very good indicator. My daughter, my youngest child, is dyslexic, and one of the first ways we realized she was dyslexic when she wrote bog instead of dog. So she loves dogs, and so we had a lot of I love bogs around the house on a lot of her pieces of paper. We still do. Bless her. But yes, so that's an easy way, you know, writing a 3 backwards or a 5 backwards. It's an easy way to perhaps signpost it for, you know, a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old in an early learning situation. But there are other ways it manifests itself. It's not just about flipping numbers. It's basically about retrieval. It's about connecting language and sound. So sometimes when you see the word A or E, you know instinctively if it's taught to you that that's the sound that goes with it. Your dyslexic brain sometimes forgets to remember that those are the links between that shape and your brain and what comes out of your mouth.
You're dyslexic. Your daughter is dyslexic. Mm-hmm. It's proven to be genetic. What about your parents?
Well, my dad, I think, was definitely dyslexic, undiagnosed. I mean, he could barely read, I think, by the time he died. I remember him trying to read Shogun, that book, for about 10 years. Nobody figured that out. He used to joke about, at school, he used to say, flutterby and hoppergrass. Another also reversal kind of scenario. He was beaten. He was at a school where, you know, that wasn't done. I wasn't diagnosed as dyslexic. I only realized when my child was diagnosed. She's here in fantastic schools in Atlanta, just some really good teachers, picked up little signs early on. And she's just had the most perfect way of learning to read, going to a specialist school here in Atlanta. And in learning about her disability, and you know, it has to be called a disability, I think, in Georgia, because that's the only way you can get remediation. But in learning about her path to literacy, I kind of figured out mine as well.
So you're an adult, you're a big deal, you're a mother, you have this huge career, and the doctor says to you you're dyslexic. What does that feel like?
The doctor didn't say I was dyslexic. I figured it out myself because I was at a series of parent lectures for my child. So they was trying to explain to parents whose children had been diagnosed as dyslexic, educating us on what to expect, how to perhaps advocate for your own child, the kind of, you know, a diagnosis, what we're talking about now. And the more I understood what it was, that it wasn't just about reversing letters, the more I thought, it was a huge sort of slow, organic self-realization that all the troubles I'd had at school were because I was dyslexic. So, and then I went to one of the school teachers at my kid's school, and I was like, you know, I think I might be. And she goes, of course you are. You're in television news. You think in pictures. You know, you look at the big picture, you simplify things, of course, and you communicate. Of course you're dyslexic. So, you know, in many ways, she picked out, you know, my sort of profile pretty easily.
How has it helped you in your career?
Literally what I just said. I mean, when I look back now, I think it's great that I just landed up going into a career that let me trust my dyslexic instincts. So, yes, when I was at school, 5, 6, 7, 8, really struggled to learn to read, really struggled at school. But by the time I managed to cobble my way through school, by the time I got to university and understood and learned about stuff that I really enjoyed, which was history and international relations and telling stories, and then got into TV news, it was sort of a natural habitat. I mean, in television news, you have to, as I said, you write to pictures. Dyslexic brains generally think multidimensionally in pictures. Writing two pictures involves simple sentences, not a lot of grammar, not a lot of spelling because you're reading your own scripts. So in many ways it is. It's a natural habitat for the dyslexic instinct.
Don't tell my producer that. We're always having grammar debates.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about grammar on international news. And then also the other thing is I talk, you know, and I digest stuff a lot. What you do, you know, you have a lot of information coming at you and you simplify it and you verbalize it for the audience in a simple way. And that's apparently a very good dyslexic strength.
I'm having a little bit of a introspection
there
here.
There we go. We might be diagnosing you on air as well. 1 in 5 people is dyslexic. I mean, that's the amazing thing. There are more of us out there than we realize.
It's an extraordinary statistic.
Yeah.
There are 5 people in this room right now with the 2 folks that you brought with us.
Mm-hmm.
One of us is dyslexic, mm-hmm. so we've proven the math.
There we go.
And the way that it's described by a lot of experts is a superpower. And a real asset. Some of the most successful and famous people have found out later in life that that's why they struggled in school. Where would the world be without dyslexics?
And I know, and one of the fancy words used to describe it is neurodiversity, you know, which I suppose is a good thing if you're an HR manager. But either way, I mean, I think the world needs different people in whatever it is, you know, and I think it's the diversity of thinking that is so good. And yes, you can list everybody from Winston Churchill to Alexander Graham Bell to Einstein to, I mean, a variety of pretty cool people. I've got a whole list.
Richard Branson.
Yep, Richard Branson, Steve Jobs, Agatha Christie. A lot of authors are dyslexic, even though you struggle to write in terms of the mechanics. There's a lot of really famous authors who are dyslexic.
Because they can see the story, they can build characters, mm-hmm. they can come up with human dynamics and storylines that are still just as interesting.
And you're unencumbered by the rules of language in many ways. And I find that when I write, thank God for spell check, and you know, you can just write rather than have to be worrying about apostrophes and commas. Because you know, that's the good thing about, you know, computers. There's many of our weaknesses, the spelling, the grammar, the remembering stuff sometimes, the retrieval stuff. You know, computers can help us.
Seeing the services that your daughter receives for her disability, technically, but you see it as an asset in many ways. Are you sad that you didn't get that kind of support as a child?
I am, and I still sometimes, I would get emotional sometimes when she was having this extraordinary learning experience. And I would sometimes get quite emotional because there is that little bit of you that still feels like that little 7-year-old in class who kept on getting naught out of 10. And the teacher thought I was really, really dumb. And she would throw a book. I mean, one time she threw a book at me. She would yell at me. I just never, never quite succeeded in particularly in junior school. I was kept back, essentially failed second grade. Went to 4 schools by the time I was 10. So, I mean, it was really traumatic, and I could have really done with a teacher who recognized my strengths and not just focused it on my weaknesses. But I think it made me tough. And I think that's why maybe a lot of dyslexics are potentially successful, because you're resilient. You figure out ways very early on how to survive, how to get to the same place as everybody else in the classroom specifically. Also, just how to be a street fighter in many ways, because you're the only one who has to look after yourself, and then you also have to work. You have to work doubly hard to do the sometimes the same stuff as, you know, your classmates do. So by the time you finish school, you know, I think you're pretty well prepared for life.
Did you ever find that teacher who threw the book at you?
You know, I did. When I was coming to terms with all of this, you know, it's only in the last, I said, 5 or 6 years that I figured out that I was dyslexic. And it was the only time I Googled her name. I haven't ever gone back there, because she really was quite destructive. And much to my amusement, and actually, I mean, it's so right, isn't it? She now trains dogs, German Shepherds. She's won awards for her dog training. I clearly wasn't a very obedient puppy, which is, I suppose, you know, to be expected. But you know what the good thing, in many ways, I came out of that very also quite traumatic early schooling life. I had a warrior mother. She knew I was a very clever child. I would recite things back to her. I was engaged. I was curious. And so she knew there was a disconnect between my schoolwork and what was coming back from school and what she interacted with me on a daily basis was. So she knew that I was okay. And she kept on telling me, you're clever, you've got to prove to them you're not, you know, you're not dumb. You're not who they say you are. And that teacher actually told my mother, sweet little girl, she really is a sweet little girl. One day she'll make somebody a lovely wife and mother. And so basically she was kind of writing me off at the age of 7 or 8, saying, oh, you know, she'll be okay as long as she finds a good husband one day. And my mother told me that. And in many ways that lit a fire under me. And it's always been a huge, it's like lighting a, you know, rocket, because, you know, ever since I was about 8 or 9, I've needed to prove that I wouldn't just land up being somebody's wife. And it's, in many ways, I'm still trying to prove that, even though I have a fantastic husband.
Well, thank goodness for that teacher.
Yeah,
then.
I know. So that's, you know, in many ways, you know, I'm lucky because I had this warrior mother. I also landed up finding a school that was okay. And I found my place in the world. So, you know, I think if I look back, you know, I'm okay with my resilience and my street fight a bit.
Robert Curnow, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.